G'day, wherever you are around the world, and thank you for your company. It is time for another Spiritual Baby Speed Study on Truth to You. That's truth, number two, letter U.org. G'day, Mr. Spiritual Babies.
G'day. Good midday. It's 12 o'clock. This is the best time I've ever recorded.
It's 12 o'clock midnight, right?
No, it's not. It's midday. Oh, it's brilliant.
In the middle of the day. And it's a beautiful day in Ireland, strangely enough.
It is. It's lovely. It's not raining. That's any day that's not raining.
No, but it's like 20 degrees. Isn't that unheard of?
Yeah, and there's been a whole load of thunder and lightning across the UK, which we haven't got yet. Yesterday was tropical. Yesterday, people went out without a jumper on, without a sweater.
Because it was 21 degrees? Yeah, what was it?
21, and the sun was out.
It was 21!
The sky was blue. Wow.
How about that? Do you know, that means that you and I are enjoying the same weather.
Oh, look at that.
That's so weird.
But without any killy insect animal things.
Well, we pondered that. Right. What we're looking at today is 1 Kings chapter... All right, so 1 Kings chapter 12 from what? Verse 25 on? And all the way through chapter 13. This is Jeroboam and the golden calves, right?
That's right, yeah. Will we read through and just kind of stop at various points? It might be good.
I reckon we read through. Look, I'm gonna speed read through this because everyone knows this. There's kind of two stories in one here. There's the side A, and that is the golden calves and all that sort of stuff. But then there's a side B, and I kind of want to focus in on that. So just to bring everyone up to speed, I'm going to start reading from verse 25. It goes like this: Then Jeroboam built Shechem in the mountains of Ephraim and dwelt there. And also he went out from there and built Penuel. And Jeroboam said in his heart, Now the kingdom may return to the house of David, if these people will go and offer sacrifices in the house of the Lord, the house of Jehovah, in Jerusalem, then the heart of these people will turn back to their lord Rehoboam, who's the king of Judah, and they will kill me and go back to Rehoboam, king of Judah. So, what's happening there, Mr. Spiritual Babies? What's that about, in short?
Well, he's freaking out that if people go up to Jerusalem, then they're not going to remain loyal to him.
Jeroboam has just been given the 10 northern tribes.
Mm-hmm.
Rehoboam, as it is in Hebrew, he's got Judah, right?
Right. And I think that both of them are eager to hold on to what they have without giving up any peoples to the opponent. And if people started going up to Jerusalem to make their offerings, then they might switch political allegiance.
Not only that, they'll be like the Jews. We can't have that. We don't want to be like the Jews, literally. Think about it. We don't want to be like the Jews. We want to have our own thing going on, so we better make ourselves a little bit different.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
Verse 28, therefore the king asked advice and made two... He asked advice, and this is what he came up with. He made two calves of gold and said to the people, It is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Here are your gods, O Israel, which brought you up from the land of Egypt. Quoting, of course, Aaron.
Mm.
Now, what do you make that? He set one up in Bet-El and the other one he put in Dan. Now, this thing became a sin for the people, and the people went and worshipped before one as far as Dan. And he made shrines on high places and made priests from every class of people who were not of the sons of Levi. What do you reckon about that? He quotes Aaron. Everyone knows that's, this didn't work out too well the first time. Why do you think it's going to work out okay this time? Why do you think he quoted Aaron and did the golden calf thing?
Well, I find it interesting that he's desperately separating himself from the Jewish people. I have to wonder whether the people he was talking to understood the history to any kind of, that kind of degree, whether they would have accepted those calves because that was what they were used to, and maybe felt that his inclusion of Aaron and inclusion of the Jewish history made it
might have somehow validated,
right? Yeah, because they didn't really know much about it, and it kind of sounded like it was right.
It was familiar, so yeah, I guess we're doing this again. So maybe that's that's fair enough. Maybe that's what the other thing is. What I was thinking was, maybe he's just kind of trying to stick it up Judah, saying, look what you've driven us to. We're going to do this now, and we all know it's wrong.
Mm.
In your face, Judah, this is what we're going to do. I wonder if there's a bit of that, because I just don't think that Jeroboam is with a raised up fist going, I'm going to worship the golden calf.
Mm.
So to God, I reckon he's doing it back at Judah going,
Maybe.
I'm going to do it like this. I don't know. It leaves room for speculation. But it goes on and says, Jeroboam ordained a feast on the 15th day of the 8th month.
Mm-hmm.
Not the 7th. Don't want to be like the Jews. 8th month. Like the feast that was in Judah, and offered sacrifices on the altar. So he did at Bethel, sacrificing to the calves that he had made. And at Bethel, he installed the priests of the high places which he had made, not Levites. Don't want to be like the Jews. And made offerings on the altar which he had made at Bethel on the 15th day of the 8th month, in the month which he had devised in his own heart, it says. And he ordained a feast for the children of Israel and offered sacrifices on the altar and burned incense. So we've got fake Levites, we've got a fake feast day, we've got fake altars, and we've got a fake God.
Right. It's a facsimile.
He went downhill pretty rapidly, didn't he? I mean, he didn't start off good, and I mean, it just...
But the point there, I guess, is that people followed blindly their leader. They listened to what he said. They obviously weren't checking it out for themselves. And they all just soaked up what they were being told and went through with it. One man on his own couldn't make that happen. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
yeah, well, that's a good point.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And so the plot thickens. Now we're in chapter 13, and behold, a man of God. We don't have a name for him.
Nope.
He's called a man of God. Went from Judah to Bethel by the word of Jehovah, and Jeroboam stood by the altar to burn incense. And then he cried out against the altar by the word of Jehovah and said, O altar, altar, thus says Jehovah, behold, the child Josiah by name shall be born to the house of David, and on you he shall sacrifice the priests and the high of the high places who burn incense to you, and men's bones shall be burnt on you. And he gave a sign the same day, saying, this is the sign which Jehovah has spoken. Surely the altar shall split apart, and the ashes on it shall be poured out. So this, I love this guy. This is the prophet with no name. And he's got the to get up there, stand among everyone, and call it what it is.
And you can read the clues. He's come from Judah. He knows what he's talking about. And he's come across this. He's come across this altar, and Jehovah has given him a message and a fire in his belly to go and stand up and shake his fist and call out. I mean, and to do that in the middle of a different nation, it's extremely. I mean, what a servant to do that without, you know, because he could die.
Well, he could die. In fact, just a few verses before, Rehoboam sent someone in. It says, verse 18 of chapter 12, Rehoboam sent Adoram, who was in charge of the revenue, but all Israel stoned him with stones, and he died. Therefore, King Rehoboam mounted his chariot in haste to flee to Jerusalem. And yet, it doesn't deter this guy with no name, a man of God. He goes there and he tells him what's what. I like this guy. And so it came to pass that when King Jeroboam heard the saying of the man of God who cried out against the altar in Bethel, he stretched out his hand from the altar, saying, you're not very respectful. You're judgmental. You're just too negative. That's what he said. He said, you can't just focus on our common what we have in common. Positive guy, come on. We can work it out. He didn't say that.
No, he didn't.
He didn't, but you know, he wasn't impressed anyway. He said, seize him, arrest him. And I'm sure he had, you know, something serious planned for this guy. And but the hand that he stretched out over the altar, his hand withered so that he could not pull it back to himself. Can you imagine it?
Yeah.
Shriveled up.
I love this symbolism as well. When we see Israel being brought out of Egypt, it says that God did it with his mighty arm. And so we have to assume, and we know of the time, that even right up to Roman times, the king or the Caesar or the leader's arm and his hand were a great tool. You know, he'd hold his thumb up for life and down for death, and he'd put his arm out in front of him for the tribes to march on.
Mm-hmm.
And so not only is this a great sign of God's power over every human being, but also in itself, it's a great sign that he's taken the power of the guy, because he would have probably he stretched out his arm towards the man and then shouted out, "Seize him." That, you know, his arm alone was a great symbol of his dominion in the land, and that was taken just like that in a click of a finger.
Just like that. And that the prophet stands alone above the king of Israel. And the altar also was split apart, and the ashes poured out from the altar according to the sign which the man of God had given by the word of Yehovah. Then the king answered and said to the man of God, "Oh, didn't mean that. Sorry, I thought he was someone else. I know. Please, listen, entreat the favor of Yehovah your God and pray for me that my hand may be restored to me." He does.
Basically, he realizes he messed up.
Well, I mean, there he is with a paralyzed hand pointing mm-hmm. in the direction while the ashes of the altar was just split apart and the ashes are poured out. And he realizes, all right.
His power to do what he did as a king is gone. He's gone. Now weak, and
all he can do is say, "Sorry about that. Can you just fix my arm?"
Right.
Please. Pretty please. The cherry on top. So the man of God entreated Yehovah, and the king's hand was restored to him and became as before. And then the king said to the man of God, "Hey, you're pretty clever. Come back with me and refresh yourself, and I'll give you a reward. I'll give you some gifts."
Mm.
What do you call that? Do you have an expression for that in Ireland?
Oh, you know what? I don't know if we do. I mean,
I was going to kill you, but now I see that you're more powerful than me, so why don't we just be friends?
I'm trying to think of a phrase.
I'll even give you a gift.
Yeah. It's the worst form of condescension and bribery. There must be a term for it. There must be a term for it.
There's one in Australia, but I can't say it. So I'm going to leave it to the listeners. If you can think of a way to sort of put this into a nutshell, love to hear from you. Put it in the comments. But the man of God said to the king, "If you were to give me half your house, I would not go with you, nor would I eat bread nor drink water from this place, for it was commanded me by the word of Yehovah, saying, 'You shall not eat bread nor drink water, nor return by the same way you came.'" Three instructions in one. Don't hang around and eat and drink with these people in this place, and don't return by the same way that you came. So he went another way and did not return by the way he came to Bethel. Now, that's the end of the A track.
Right.
But there is a B track to this story, and we're still in chapter 13, and it picks up here from verse 11. Now, was there anything you wanted to mention about thus far?
Nope, I think we're on target. In fact, this next part is my favorite part of the story.
I love this part. This is great. Now, an old prophet dwelt in Bethel. What can we speculate? It doesn't really give us too much description about this old prophet. What we do know is that it's highly likely the old prophet hasn't spoken out against the altar.
That's right.
And we'll get to this perhaps, but it does say in 2 Kings chapter 23... it describes him as an old prophet from Samaria, right?
Oh, that's very interesting.
But in any case, we can safely say that he's probably a false prophet. It says, an old prophet dwelt in Bethel, and his sons came and told him all the works that the man of God had done that day in Bethel. And they also told their father the words which he had spoken to the king. And their father said to them, "Which way did he go?" All of a sudden, there's this panic and there's this urgency about him. And for his sons had seen which way the man of God went who came from Judah. Then he said to the sons, "Saddle my donkey for me." So they saddled the donkey for him, and he rode on it, and he went after the man of God, and he found him sitting under an oak tree, and he said to him, "Are you the man of God who came from Judah?" He said, "I am." And then he said, "Ah, yes, come home with me and eat bread." What's going through your mind?
A few things. First of all, this guy we're assuming from the rest of the text that he was a completely false prophet, and he lived under the banner of prophet, but that's not what he did. He certainly wasn't speaking for God. Mm-hmm. And so then this guy comes, and he hears about that, makes a prophecy under the name of God. The prophecy comes true, and mm-hmm. now this guy's about to be outed. You know, mm-hmm. he's sitting at home. His son's coming to go, have you seen what this guy's doing? And he's, oh, crap. He's going to, you know, people are going to come to me and say, why didn't you say that? Or why did you go along with this up to this point?
Good point. Good
you know,
point.
So, you know, I'm gonna buddy up with this guy. You know, people are going to see we're two peas in a pod.
That's right.
Right.
Because think about it. This guy, he's from Judah. He's the real deal.
Right.
He came and spoke the words of Yehovah. What he said in the name of Yehovah came true, and now he's on his way.
Mm.
And he's from Judah. And I can't let that go. This guy's authentic. This guy's got credibility. And to a false prophet, cha-ching.
Oh, yeah, that's going to rub off. Right.
Credibility equals some
cha-ching.
You know, cha-ching. And so you've got to go get the Jew, validate your own prophetic ministry by being seen in town with this guy. This guy even comes back and eats at your house.
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me? Everyone is talking about this guy right now. He's hot. We need him. I need to get him back here, and I need to be seen with this guy, and I got to get him. Gain by credibility through association. That's what he's doing, and that's why he's so urgently. So he's found him. But the man of God said, I cannot return with you nor go in with you, neither can I eat bread nor drink water with you in this place, for I have been told by the word of Yehovah, you shall not eat bread nor drink water there, nor return by going the way you came. Then it gets really interesting. And this is the verse that is pivotal to the whole story, I think. Verse 18, he said to him, the false prophet, the old false prophet, said to him, hey, I too am a prophet, as you are. I'm like you. We're the same. And then he even embellishes upon that, and he says, and an angel spoke to me by the word of Yehovah, saying, bring him back with you to your house, that he may eat bread and drink water. Then it says, so clearly and plainly, I love it. It just says he was lying to him.
Mm.
But he needed that credibility. He absolutely, particularly now that, like you said, a real prophet of God has come, given a word, and all of a sudden everyone who's involved with this particular expression of spirituality, this expression of religion, is now in trouble, and particularly those who are in some sort of authority, which evidently this guy is.
Mm.
Therefore, quickly get him, be friends with this guy, be seen with this guy, get this guy to come back and eat in your house. You know, I need something authentic, like a Jew, to come and validate that which I am. So he lies to him. It's worth it to him to lie to him and say, oh, an angel.
And what's very sad for me is that he's so eager to bolster his own position that not only does he lie, but he also lies about his relationship with God. And he lies about the events that he said took place. He puts them under some sort of banner of God's big plan. And God sent me an angel, and God said this, and you have to do this, and you have to do that, and you have to do that with me. And then how disgusting is that to lay down something as God's plan that is really your own?
We see it a lot today. But but see, the real prophet should have known, because it's in Deuteronomy chapter 13. For it says, verse 3, you shall not listen to the words of that prophet or that dreamer of dreams, for Yehovah your God is testing you to know whether you love Yehovah your God with all your heart and with all your soul, and you shall walk after Yehovah your God and fear him and keep his commandments and obey his voice. You shall serve him and hold fast to him. But he didn't hold fast. He didn't obeyed the commandment which he was given. He went back. He was duped by this guy. Oh, an angel, really? Oh, well, there's been an update and I wasn't filled in, so I guess I'll go with you.
Mm.
He was probably very charismatic.
Yeah, and you know, you don't know whether the guy was stuck between a rock and a hard place. Maybe he genuinely believed this guy. Maybe he genuinely thought, well, there's been an update. Well, then you'd have to ask yourself, why didn't he just tell me?
There it is. And look, I reckon, you know, this is such a valuable lesson for us today. Apparently there's been an update. I mean, everything we've been given in the Tanakh, there's nothing missing. It's all catered for. But all of a sudden, there's more. Joseph Smith said there's more. Paul the Apostle said there's more. It's changed now. What do you mean? But no, you know, we're to stick with what we've been given.
Mm-hmm.
Valuable lesson. Anyways, so he went back with him. He went back with the old prophet, and he said, and he ate bread in his house, and he drank water. And now it happened. Actually, you know what? Before I move on, I think, is it Ezekiel 13? There's a lot of 13s. Here we are in Kings, 1 Kings 13. We just went to Deuteronomy 13. Is it Ezekiel 13 that I'm thinking of? Yeah. Verse 3. Thus says Adonai Yehovah, woe to the foolish prophets who follow their own spirit and have seen nothing.
Mm.
O Israel, your prophets are like foxes in the desert. Goes on. Wow, okay. 3 13s in a row. Anyway, moving on. So it happened that they sat at the table, and the word of Yehovah came to the prophet who had brought him back. This is the old guy, the false prophet, and he cried out, the man of God. It's almost like saying, ha, tricked you, you're going to die. He cried out to the man of God who came from Judah, saying, thus says Yehovah, because you have disobeyed the word of Yehovah and have not kept the commandment which Yehovah your God commanded you, but you came back and ate bread and drank water in the place of which Yehovah said to you, eat no bread and drink no water, your corpse shall not come to the tomb of your fathers.
Mm. I have to, the next line for me is a huge puzzle. Because it says, when the man of God had finished eating and drinking, the prophet who had brought him back saddled his donkey for him. So I have to wonder, the prophet from Judah is sitting there. First, he's been told, you know, God told me via an angel, you have to come back and have some dinner with me. And then he's told, God said that because you didn't do what I told you, you're going to die. I mean, did he then go, oh, this guy's off his face. I'm just going to sit here and finish my dinner. I mean, I would have got my coat. You know, if at that point, if I'd have realized, if it had been so clear, then suddenly that I'd made this terrible mistake, I'd have been, that's enough for me. I'm just going to get my coat now and go. And maybe God will see that I made an honest mistake and I'll be forgiven. Well, but this guy didn't. He sat and finished his meal.
This is a really good point, because he should have known better. He was given very, very clear instruction. Maybe when the veil was lifted, he thought, well, I'm in no rush to die.
Mm. Oh, maybe, yeah.
I don't want to go now. Mm. I think I'll just finish this last meal and...
look, the prophet who brought him back saddled his donkey for him, so he didn't even do his own donkey.
No, maybe what he thought, I'll just stay here tonight. No, you've got to go now.
I'm not leaving.
So he saddled the donkey and the prophet whom... for the prophet whom he had brought back. And when he was gone, a lion met him on the road and killed him, and his corpse was thrown to the road, and the donkey stood by it. The lion also stood by the corpse. Now, this is fascinating, because the lion didn't finish the meal.
Right.
It's as if the lion wasn't even there for the meal. It was as if the lion was merely instructed to take the guy out and kill him.
Yeah. And so we end up with a donkey... And a dead guy and a lion standing by the side of the road, which must have been very odd for everyone who's looking at it.
A donkey and a lion on the side of the road next to a corpse.
Right.
Mm. Okay. And there men passed by, and they saw the corpse thrown down on the road and the lion standing by the corpse. And when they went and told it in the city where the old prophet dwelt, he said, oh, it's the man of God who was disobedient to the word of Yehovah. Therefore, Yehovah has delivered him to the lion, which has torn him and killed him, according to the word of Yehovah, which he spoke to him. And he spoke to his son, saying, saddle the donkey again for me, fellas, come on. So they saddled it. And he went out and found the corpse thrown down on the road, and the donkey and the lion were still standing by the corpse, as if like a witness of what had happened.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's amazing. The lion had not eaten the corpse nor torn the donkey. And the prophet took up the corpse of the man of God, laid it on the donkey, and brought it back. So the old prophet came to the city to mourn and to bury him, and they laid his corpse in his own tomb, the old prophet, the false prophet. And they mourned over him, saying, alas, my brother. Do you reckon that's a bit of, you know, "Oh, my brother, you were my best friend. Yeah. Now that you're dead, everyone, listen, listen around me. Oh, we were best friends. We were like this.
Oh, you should have heard about the times we spent together.
The times that we spent together and the prophecies that we shared that God had given us." But you know what? In the end, he got him, you know, dead or alive. Right. He's valuable to him. He's got him dead, and that's almost just as good. And so it was after he had buried him that he spoke to his son, saying, "When I am dead, then bury me in the tomb where the man of God is buried. Lay my bones beside his bones, for the saying which he cried out by the word of Jehovah against the altar of Bethel and against all the shrines of the high places which are in the cities of Samaria will surely come to pass." How about that? And it goes on to say in verse 33, "After this, Jeroboam did not turn from his evil way, but again made, you know, he just went on and did all the wrong things." But isn't that interesting? So the man of God came and said, "All you the false priests, you guys are going to be slaughtered on this altar, and you know everyone who's in trouble with this whole abomination, the men are going to have their bones ground, you know, right into the altar."
That's it. And that's what he was trying to, the false prophets trying to avoid that by getting his bones placed next to the true prophet's bones. He's hoping to avoid his bones being involved in that prophecy.
Interesting. Mm. And so, and of course, as we said, that prophecy is fulfilled. You can read about it in 2 Kings chapter 23. But it is interesting to think, what did that mean to people in the day? The value of one's bones. I mean, you know, one of the curses of the man of God, once he had disobeyed, is that his bones would not be returned to the tomb of his father. His corpse would not find its way back to the tomb of his fathers. He's not going to be there. His bones will not be there. It'll be somewhere else, somewhere foreign, in this abomination of a place that he's been sent to. And in that, the old man, the old prophet, says, "I want my bones to be jumbled up, even put next to this guy, so it's not taken altogether and ground up." And Josiah actually honors that, so you can read about that in chapter 23 of 2 Kings. Mm. Interesting, anyhow. Something to speculate on. Further thoughts?
Just know that if you're listening to this and you read something in the Word of God, stick to it, and don't be swayed by people who look like this.
"Oh, but I had a dream." Right, I had a dream. Listen, I know that's what you... I know, but listen, I've got new information, and I had a dream, and an angel spoke to me. You know, I had a revelation.
And don't forget, the beginning of this story is about one group of people who were doing it the correct way and another group of people who were making up their own rules as they went along. There's only two groups. There's no middle group. So it's the right way and the wrong way. And we can read in our Tanakh the right way. And I would suggest sticking to that.
Stick with that. And if you know, and I mean, listen, I've met people who have said, "Look, this is what I believe," to one group of people. And when they're speaking to another group of people, they say, "Oh, this is what I believe."
Right.
Because that's something that they want to get from them. So be careful. Be careful with people like that. Just stick to what it says.
And don't look back. I mean, when I see, you know, "Do not stop for food, do not stop for water, and don't go back the way you came," I see Lot there, you know. Don't look back on the city.
True.
If you've passed through something that it was negative and that you can look back on now and say was the wrong thing to do, whatever that might be, I know, you know, from personal experience, I can say that I've made a few bad choices when it comes to my walk with God. Don't turn around and look for some way of salvaging that. That was a lesson you've learned. Move on.
Oh, beautiful. Couldn't have said it better. That's a great place to leave it. Spiritualbabies.net is the website. Thank you, my friend Jason, Spiritual Babies, and you've been listening to Truth to You, truth2u.org. In the meantime, dear listeners, until next time, be blessed and be set apart by the truth of our Father's Word.